Today is Monday, March 15, 2010. I'm Laurel Nemi, your host for The Wildlife, a program that probes the mysteries of the animal world through interviews with scientists and other wildlife investigators. Today on The Wildlife, I'll talk with Grayska Gabriel, Asia Regional Director for the International Fund for Animal Welfare. We'll talk about tiger conservation, international trade in tiger parts, and how the booming industry of tiger farming in China is killing to make a living. But first, let me play you today's creature call. This week's creature call is a sound of greeting and contentment from an endangered cat that lives in fragmented forest pockets in Asia. At the end of the show, I'll play these sounds again, tell you what kind of animal made them, and also give you a preview of next week's creature call. Now, let me turn to my conversation with Grayska Gabriel, Asia Regional Director for the International Fund for Animal Welfare, also known as IFAW. After joining the International Fund for Animal Welfare in 1997, Grace established the IFAW China Office, which was the first and only international animal welfare organization operating in mainland China. There, she managed and directed an array of wildlife conservation campaigns and projects in China and Asia. For over a decade, she's been actively involved in the global campaign to end the tiger trade and has personally investigated the illegal trade in tiger parts and derivatives. She's led IFAW's China program, which provides strategic support to the organization's overall mission of reducing commercial exploitation of wildlife, preserving wildlife habitat, and helping animals in crisis and distress. She's spearheaded numerous campaigns, including those to protect Tibetan antelope, reduce trade of wildlife and products, including bears, tigers, elephants, and others, and also campaigns that improve the status of companion animals through legislation and education. She's also been involved in projects to conserve Asian elephant habitat, provide emergency relief to animals in disasters, and help establish China's first raptor rescue center. Grace was born and grew up in China. She received her degrees in journalism and communications both in China and the United States. She's fluent in both Mandarin Chinese and English. When we talked recently, I asked Grace to tell me about the importance of tigers in Chinese culture.
There are two animals in Chinese culture that are very, very significant. One is the dragon, one is the tiger.
What do they symbolize?
They're both symbolizing strength, power, beauty, charm. The difference is tiger is an animal that's a real animal. And it's still an existing animal, so that's and tiger is also in the Chinese zodiac. So every 12 years, Tiger Year comes along, and in fact, we just got into a new year of the tiger, and particularly on the year of the tiger, a lot of people would want to have children born in the year of the tiger because it's a very auspicious year. It's a very auspicious symbol. And tiger images, tiger was written in Chinese literature, in Chinese art. And it's very significant. It's part of the Asian culture and not just Chinese. Tiger is a species that's only existed in Asia, so it's kind of a pride of the Asian continent.
Interesting. So, have you seen births increase during years of the tiger?
Yeah, a lot of people time the birth of children for those years that are more auspicious than others.
And does that give the child then luck and strength and?
Yeah. All of the attributes that people believe tiger has.
What is the conservation status of tigers? You said tigers exist only in Asia, and how many are there, and what kinds are there?
Estimates a century ago, there are probably about 100,000 tigers that range across Asia, all the way to the Caspian Sea. And unfortunately, in the past century, three subspecies of tigers, there are altogether eight subspecies of tigers, and three have become extinct. Caspian tiger and two other subspecies that are isolated in the island of Java and Bali, both have become extinct. And South China tiger, which is another subspecies, haven't been seen in the wild for over 30 years.
Oh,
so
really?
Scientists believe that South China tiger subspecies may have also become extinct, what's called functional extinct. There are still some South China tigers in zoos, in captive facilities, but they have been extinct in the wild. And there, as I said, a century ago, there may be 100,000 tigers across Asia. Now their habitat is has shrunk to perhaps 7% of their original range.
Only 7% of their original.
7%. Less than 7%. And also the less than 7% of their range and the numbers have been declining drastically, and particularly in the last 10 years, tiger numbers have come down to perhaps fewer than 3,200 left in the wild.
Wow, 3,200 left.
Yes.
And where are they? And what are the remaining subspecies?
Tigers, there are still tigers in 13 range states in Asia. And the remaining subspecies are scattered in these range states from Russia's Far East to bordering with China to Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, to South Asia, Bhutan, Myanmar, India, Malaysia, Indonesia.
In India, there's the Bengal tiger, which is the most populous, is that right?
It's believed that India may have about half of the remaining wild tiger population, which would be, yes, Bengal tiger.
What are the other subspecies? There's the Bengal tiger, the Siberian...
Indo-Chinese tiger. That's in the southern China, bordering with Vietnam, Laos, Thailand, Myanmar. And Bengal tiger is in India, Nepal, and some may also come into in the Himalayas region, so come into China.
Okay.
And also the Amur tiger, what we call... A lot of people know Amur tiger by the other name, Siberian tiger.
Okay.
But they really don't live in Siberia per se. It's also called Amur tiger.
Okay. And where are they found mostly?
They are found in the Russia Far East.
What factors contribute to the tiger's decline?
Tigers are threatened by habitat loss and habitat fragmentation. As I said, the tiger's range has shrunk to less than 7% of its historical domain. And a lot of its habitat is cut off, fragmented by agriculture and development activities. And so that is one of the big threats to tigers. And another threat is loss of prey. Tiger, you know, as top predators, tigers rely on a lot of hoofed animals, ungulates, to survive. And because in a lot of the forests, the hoofed animals are being hunted or poached, and people killed them, and tigers lost their prey. If they don't have enough food, of course, they can't survive. And another more direct and, I believe, you know, more menacing threat to tigers is poaching. Poaching of tigers for their trade in their parts and derivatives.
So what are tigers used for? Why are they poached so much?
Historically, because and unfortunately, tigers, one of tigers' attributes is its power and strength. Historically, tiger bone was used in traditional Chinese medicine. In 3,000 years ago, for instance, Chinese medicine materia medica included tiger bone as an ingredient for treating ailments such as rheumatism. But since the 90s, China has banned the use of tiger bone in traditional Chinese medicine, and has taken the tiger bone off the materia medica, and also take off tiger bone from traditional Chinese medicine college curriculum. And the Chinese government actually has conducted public awareness campaigns and targeting that TCM industry to dissuade the use of tiger bone, and that has effectively contained the market in China, at least the market for using tiger bone in traditional Chinese medicine.
Has it stopped the practice?
Because it's historical use, there are a lot of people still believe, you know, if you use tiger products, if you use tiger bone, it somehow is good for your bone. So that belief is hard to kill.
Have scientists found that it's true, that it does help, or has there been no evidence yet, or has it not been studied?
Well, there has been study actually. In one of the efforts since China banned the use of tiger bone in TCM is looking for alternatives, alternative ingredients. And by looking for alternative ingredients, you need to know what actually is contained in tiger bone. And research has found that what's contained in tiger bone is calcium. And there have been a lot of alternative ingredients, and you know, even calcium tablets that have been effectively used in treating you know, bone ailments and pain and things like that. So it's definitely not an absolutely necessary to use tiger bone to treat rheumatism.
And then we hear a lot about tiger bone wine. Is that just another use of tiger bone, or is that more of a luxury product?
This is the gist of the issue. Since the market, the traditional Chinese medicine market, has been contained by the government trade ban, unfortunately, there are corporations that farm tigers. They breed. Speed breed tigers and then kill them to produce a new product, which is this tiger bone wine. They soak tiger bone in liquor and sell this tiger bone wine to consumers who already, you know, who had the belief that somehow eating tiger parts is good for them. And what this trade it is doing is creating a new market for tiger products, which the TCM market has been reduced. Now they're creating another market for a new product. It's a product looking for a market.
Oh, interesting. So tell me about these tiger farms that you just were talking about. They're corporations that are breeding the tigers?
Yeah, there are only a few private individuals and corporations that they are breeding wildlife for the purpose. The sole purpose is for the trade of these wildlife.
Tell me more about these farms.
What the tiger farms are doing, they are breeding tigers for the trade of their parts. And, you know, tigers eat a lot. And so when these farms first set up, I'll use an example of this one farm in southern China. When he set up the tiger farm, it was right after Chinese government banned the trade of tiger bone. And I visited the farm and even talked with the tiger farm owner and urged him to not, you know, bank on trading dead tigers, because it's going to threaten wild tigers, it's going to create a market, it's going to in fact the ban is going to affect his business. He's not going to be allowed to trade his tiger parts, and we urge him not to breed so many tigers and put so much financial burden on himself. But of course, he didn't heed our advice, and now this farm has over 1,200 tigers. And in the past 2 months, what we have seen is a lot of these tiger farm businesses are stepping up their marketing, trying to sell tiger bone wine, not only on the premise of the farms, but also online and in retail outlets in other cities in China. What they're doing is trying to create a demand, and it's a market looking for it's a product looking for a market, and they're trying to create a demand and making a killing just ahead of the year of the tiger.
Wow. So how many tiger farms are there, and how many tigers are in them, or does nobody know?
According to Chinese government documents that they submitted to CITES, there are right now there are over 6,000 tigers in various farms, and they're not most of them are very small, but I wouldn't even call them tiger farms. Some of them are just zoos, but they do raise tigers also in the hope to be able to trade them. But the real big farms, there are about five big farms.
Okay. And what are conditions like at those farms?
A lot of these farms also operate as safari parks. So they sell tickets for tourists, and the space is an issue, of course. So tigers, in fact, tigers are solitary animals, but you would see in these farms the animals are there could be a whole, like lions, a whole pride of them in one enclosure. And they also force and train a lot of these animals to perform. There are tiger circus performances. There are also tigers had their teeth pulled out and chained to the ground for tourists to jump on them and take pictures. It's just it's just awful conditions and a lot of abuse in these places. And also one of the things that tiger farms do in order to get more money from, you know, ticket sales is not enough. Selling shows, tiger performances is not enough. They are also asking tourists to buy a chicken or rabbit or a cow and alive. These are live animals. And then they would let tourists buy them and then release them into the enclosure to see tigers tearing these animals apart.
And is it mostly foreign tourists or European tourists, American tourists, Asian tourists?
They are, unfortunately, most of them Chinese tourists.
And then are the shops associated with it that sell tiger bone wine?
Yes. In fact, in many of these places, the shop slash it's also what they call an education center. It's they call it an education center, and then in fact, when you go in, you are solicited to purchase tiger bone wine, and they will have signs telling you, you know, tiger's whole body, what different parts of the tiger is used for what.
And so what are the different parts of a tiger used for? I've often heard that a tiger is worth more dead than alive because the parts are so valuable.
Well, I think it's a lot of it is well, it is true. I mean, it's we have seen confiscations of tiger pelts. A whole tiger pelt can be sold for, you know, $30,000. But a lot of the use of tiger whiskers or tiger claw or even, you know, some promotions of tiger penis for you know, sexual powers, and a lot of this is really promotion, and there is no scientific base for any of these.
Let's talk a little bit about the laws. Is it legal to sell tiger bone wine, and what is the law for tiger parts? You had said that China bans the use of tiger parts.
The ban is on tiger bone.
Okay, the ban is on tiger bone.
The ban is on tiger bone. And it banned not just the sale of tiger bone, buying, selling, stocking, transporting of tiger bone were all banned it's a state council notice. But the thing is, there is this conflict between China's wildlife protection law, which allows captive breeding of endangered species for commercial trade, and there is also a specific tiger bone trade ban. So these two were in conflict, and so there's these tiger farms, what they're doing is they're operating in that gray area. And when we talk with government officials, they all say, yes, it's illegal. They shouldn't be selling tiger bone wine. However, there hasn't been any enforcement to shut down tiger farms or confiscate any of the tiger bone products.
Why is that? You often hear a lot about the Chinese government making different seizures and arrests related to tigers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I wanted to talk about both the just regular enforcement issues, but also why isn't there enforcement to shut down tiger farms?
Yes, enforcement, oftentimes you see confiscation, and there have been enforcement actions in particularly in by customs and border police in border regions and to confiscate smuggled wild tiger parts. However, when it comes to enforcement to shut down the tiger bone wine trade, it has a lot to do. The lack of enforcement has a lot to do with, number one, as I said, that gray area, the conflict with wildlife protection law. And since the law allows them to captive breed for commercial purposes, and these places can say they are operating according to the law. And also there's a lot of money involved. These are pretty big corporations. If they can be selling each bottle of wine, for instance, as we have seen, that in one of the cellars in the linked with the tiger farm, there are 400 huge vats, each containing a tiger carcass. And the price of the wine is based on how long it has been soaked in that vat. One tiger carcass, they can generate hundreds and thousands of dollars. You know, they can soak it for a few years. They can claim it. It's a 5-year wine. They can claim it as a 10-year wine, and each selling $100 or more. Each bottle selling $100 or more. So there's a lot of money involved in that, and so I wouldn't rule out, you know, the possibility of corruption and protection of local business.
And can they also claim that the animals died just naturally, and so they're using a byproduct?
They can, but it's also, according to the State Council trade ban, even if it's died of natural death, the tiger bone is supposed to be, the stockpile is supposed to be sealed.
Okay.
And another important issue is CITES. You know, CITES has listed tigers as Appendix 1 species, so all of the international commercial trade is banned. And since then, CITES has also come up with a resolution. It's at its 12th conference of the parties, and within the resolution, it's urging parties to destroy a stockpile of tiger bone. And I have yet to see any destruction of tiger bone stockpile. And if they are not being used, and if the ban is effective, then countries with particularly consuming countries with tiger bone stockpile should destroy that stockpile instead of leaving it there to give people the incentive or the idea to use it.
Now, in some sense, that's almost that's very similar to ivory, elephant ivory.
Yes.
The issue of what to do with the stockpiles.
Mm-hmm.
And now the 12th, that was it was a resolution that urged parties to destroy, and that was at the 12th conference. When was that? Was that 2000?
That was in 2002.
2002.
In Santiago, Chile.
And what has happened since then? So the stockpiles have not been destroyed, is that correct?
Correct. I have seen destruction of you know, tiger pelts confiscated at border regions, but I have yet to see tiger bone stockpile being destroyed. And the fact is, a lot of these tiger farms, they do say, you know, we got 200 tiger carcasses in the freezer, and each of them is worth gold, you know, tons of gold, and why can't we use them? And having these tiger carcasses and stockpile stored there, it does give people ideas to use them.
More recently, there's been a proposal at the last conference of parties. There's been a proposal related to the use of tigers on these farms. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. While these tiger farm businessmen, while they are already selling tiger bone wine, they are also lobbying the Chinese government to lift the trade ban. So in 2007, at the CITES conference, 14th conference of the parties, Chinese government had indicated that they are looking at lifting the trade ban. They are evaluating their policies, and so at that conference, it created, you know, China's declaration of possibly lifting the trade ban had got the world worried. You know, in today's China, with the economic development, with the consuming power of Chinese consumers, if today we lift the tiger trade ban, it would mean the extinction of wild tigers, no question about it. And so at the CITES conference, 14th conference of the parties, CITES parties agreed to a series of decisions, one of which was to urge parties not to breed tigers for the trade of their parts and derivatives. And another decision was urging parties, if they are breeding tigers, then they need to keep tiger numbers at a level only good for that would only benefit wild tiger conservation, and otherwise shouldn't be keeping or breeding so many tigers. And there was also decisions to increase law enforcement. There was also a decision urging parties that are evaluating their policies to take into consideration of the previous CITES resolution, the resolution on the trade and trade control of tigers, which is at the, it's called 12.5, CONF 12.5 resolution. So all these decisions were adopted at COP14. However, unfortunately, decisions are only good between the CITES conferences. So at this conference of the parties that's coming up in March, EU has proposed, has put in a proposal to strengthen the CITES conference resolution 12.5 by including some of the languages adopted as decision at the last conference.
Okay, and is that controversial? Do you expect at this next meeting in March that will be a problem to get that adopted?
Well, we are working very hard trying to urge countries to support that resolution. One of the things, you know, last week I was supposed to testify in that congressional hearing, was we're urging the U.S. government also to take a position and in support of this this proposal because U.S. has always taken a leadership role in tiger conservation. In the early 1990s, it was U.S. Threat of sanctions forced many countries to improve their tiger trade control and even put in trade bans. And in the U.S., there is also the Rhino Tiger Act, which basically, if you claim this product contained tiger or rhino parts, then you can be prosecuted for doing that. And all these are
That's even if the product does not actually contain the item.
Exactly. That means the burden of proof doesn't rest on law enforcement agencies. If somebody who's trying to sell a product and claim that this contained tiger bone, this person can be prosecuted just for that claim, instead of putting the burden on law enforcement trying to do DNA tests and to confirm that this product indeed contains tiger bone. And I think that is a great model for many other countries to adopt and follow. So we're urging the U.S. to take a leadership role in support of this EU proposal on tigers.
Have you had any indications of what role they'll take or not yet? Because in part the hearing was postponed.
Yeah. I haven't heard any concrete, but we're still in discussion and trying to meet with the Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service officials.
There's a lot of claims you mentioned about keeping the numbers solely for in the tiger farms at the levels that would be appropriate for conservation. Can these tigers be released into the wild?
No, they can't. In fact, these tigers are so genetically compromised. They are crossbred, they are inbred, and also they just don't have the skills to survive in the wild. And if they are released into into any of the open areas, first of all, there is no habitat for them and no prey. And if there are prey, these tigers, they don't even know how to kill. They have been trying to kill as a group, but tigers are solitary predators and so these tigers, if they're released, most likely they will go into the surrounding communities and pose a threat, in fact, to people and to livestock, which means death to them. And also they're genetically so compromised, it would be a disaster if they ever were released into places where there are wild tigers.
And you had mentioned that they're used to eating livestock, chickens and cows and things, so that's what they'd go after, presumably.
Exactly. And if they go after livestock, it's very easy to assume that they will be killed.
And there's been a lot of debate over whether legalizing the trade increases or decreases demand for products.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that if the proposal was not to go through, you know, would that hurt or help wild tigers to create a, you know, captive bred market for tiger products?
The thing is, it's farming type, poaching will be always more cost competitive than farming a tiger for trade. The profit margin for poaching is much, much higher than farming a tiger. You raise a tiger on a farm, it costs thousands of dollars, you know, to feed tiger, this tiger meat, to the enclosure cost, the staff cost, the people cost, and versus hunting and killing a tiger in the wild, it's a very crude wire trap or a drop of poison or a bullet. Yeah, even if you calculate in the cost of bribes and transport and possibly you know, a jail sentence for the trader, but it a lot of times you know these illegal traders, it's very, very easy for them to smuggle a poached wild tiger into the market, and the profit margin would be so much higher.
And is it even possible to distinguish between farm tigers and wild tigers in the trade?
You can't even, it's even hard to distinguish whether this wine has tiger bone or doesn't have tiger bone, let alone distinguishing whether this bone comes, you know, is it coming from tiger, is it coming from lion, from legal, a farm tiger, or from wild tiger. It's impossible. And again, who is going to bear the burden of proving that?
I wanted to get back to the issue of enforcement. And, you know, how much, are there any estimates of how much is being illegally traded? Can you talk about some of the recent seizures by China and other Asian countries?
Well, just last week, there was a seizure in Nepal of tiger pelts. And there are seizures almost every week from across tigers range. And since it's illegal, I mean, since this trade is illegal, it is very, very difficult to estimate how large or how much it costs. But according to customs organization, seizures only represent at most 10% of the actual illegal trade. So almost every week, and I'll use another example of India. In the mortality rate of Indians wild tigers last year increased by 20%, and the Russian tiger population, the Amur tiger population in Russia's Far East, for a long time, scientists and conservationists were, you know, happy that population has been stable, and it has been stable because of the trade ban, because of, you know, the area, the law enforcement agencies in the area were effective. However, in the past, just last year, WCS survey indicate that Amur tiger population may have declined 30 to 40% in the past 5 years.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
What sorts of other, you had talked a lot about reducing demand in the Chinese government's efforts to reduce the demand for tiger parts in traditional medicine. And I'm wondering mm-hmm. about other types of public awareness campaigns that mm-hmm. Either you in IFA or the International Tiger Coalition or others are doing to reduce demand mm-hmm. for tiger parts.
There have been some public awareness, but you know, for in the 90s when the trade ban first put into place, I think at that time even the Chinese government started a public awareness campaign and putting the you know, do not buy tiger products on the labels of a lot of TCM products and organizing education conferences with the TCM industry. However, in the past few years, and I think it coincides with these farms are getting so many tigers and they are pushing the government to lift the trade ban, and there haven't been any public awareness in China, you know, done by the government for at least for the last 5-6 years. However, there are a few organizations that are at least doing public awareness in China. Wildaid, for instance, has done a lot of using celebrities to do PSAs, urging celebrities such as, you know, Jackie Chan, Yao Ming, to do PSAs urging Chinese not to use tiger parts. And IFAW also started a website. In fact, we feel that a lot of the education on not to use tiger parts were done from outside into China, or people trying to tell Chinese what not to do, what to do. And so our website was, in fact, we supported a group of Chinese conservationists and set up a website called Love Tiger Website. And the website is developed by Chinese and speaking to Chinese in Chinese. And the website has got the support of a lot of Chinese famous artists, famous writers, and they write blogs on the website and urging Chinese consumers and basically reminding them of the significance of tiger in our culture and reminding us that, you know, we shouldn't, if we push tigers to become extinct, you know, they currently, it's an animal in our zodiac, and we still have this animal, and we don't want it to become a dragon, which is non-existent.
And so, if people are interested in this issue, what can they do to help?
There are a lot of depending on what kind of work you're supporting, you can tell your politicians, for instance, people in the U.S. can urge the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to take a leadership role, for instance, in support of the EU proposal on tigers. You can also support organizations such as IFAW to do these public awareness campaigns to reduce demand in tiger-consuming countries. You can also support, there are a lot of anti-poaching work that's done in tiger range countries, in India, in the Russia Far East. You know, the part of the reason for the Russian Amur tiger to decline is the fact that in Russia in the past few years, the anti-poaching force has been completely lack of funding and lack of political support. And these are all things that you can support and make a difference for wild tigers.
Well, I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with me.
You're welcome.
I hope you enjoyed those insights into the trade in tiger parts and tiger farming with Grace Gabriel, Asia Regional Director for the International Fund for Animal Welfare. Now, let me play you today's creature call once again and see if you've guessed it correctly. The animals that make these sounds are endangered cats that live in fragmented forest pockets in Asia. They've also been the subject of today's discussion. Of course, they're the sound of tigers. However, it's not a growl that you'll hear, but rather a moan, which is the sound of greeting and contentment made by this large predator. For next week's creature call, I'll stay within the bird family but move to Cambodia, where this critically endangered creature lives. Now, here's your preview. Be sure to tune in next week when I'll replay this strange sound from the wild world and reveal the animal that made it. Next week, I'll also talk with Julie Stein from the Wildlife Friendly Enterprise Network. We'll talk about certification of wildlife-friendly products and how this can help conserve threatened wildlife while contributing at the same time to the economic vitality of rural communities. Archived episodes of The Wildlife are available on iTunes, at my website, laurelnimi.com, and at laurelnimi.podbean.com. You can stream The Wildlife live at theradiator.org every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, if you have comments about this show or ideas for future ones, you can email me at laurel@laurelnimi.com. This has been The Wildlife. I'm your host, Laurel Nimi, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP, in Burlington, Vermont.